Imagine a single cream that addresses all your skincare needs. Wrinkles, dark circles, age spots, and more. Introducing Caviar Gone Skin Cream, the only argon, caviar, and retinol formula on the market. Packed with pure Moroccan argon oil, collagen-boosting caviar extract, and retinol, Caviar Gone deeply hydrates, firms, and rejuvenates without the irritation of traditional retinol. Trusted by women over 45, Caviar Gone delivers visible results in just weeks. Smoother, firmer, more radiant skin. It's not just possible, it's proven. Visit CaviarGone.com today to claim your jar at up to 72% off. That's CaviarGone.com. Again, that's CaviarGone.com. Experience the luxury your skin deserves.
For a limited time, we're giving away a free Gua Sha system, a $70 value, with all triple bundle orders.
Podcast coming out a little bit later to wrap up the week, but
You got extra days to watch. We got an extra day of non-production on the weekend, so
true. But there's a good reason why, because we had two guests coming up today. We're putting four of us in the conversation this afternoon.
Yeah, but that you know, the thing is that when guys travel and guys are with teams and they're moving, you know, as a good Canadian would say, out and about, you know, that happens. So you have to be flexible on your times, right? You have to be flexible.
Nick Olchek from the Utah Hockey Club, part of their broadcast, will join us along with Eddie Olchek, who calls games for the Seattle Kraken and TNT.
Yep.
They're also father and son. And
what?
Both broadcasters in the National Hockey League. In your time, how many father-son combinations has there been?
Well, there's been a few. You know, I mean, I worked with the great Dan Kelly in St. Louis, and his son, John, who is now the voice of the Blues, was around early times. And they actually did a game together in the late 1980s before Dan passed away. But, you know, and we do see it. We do see it in other sports. You know, the Bucks, Joe and Jack, are obviously legendary as well. There's a few, but it is a bit of a rarity, in my mind, it's much more of a rarity now when you consider that the system is that it's Eddie being a former player and his son, former NHL player, his son trying to get in the business. So to me, it was kind of cool. You know, Ray and Landon Ferraro are starting to do this in Vancouver now. And the magic of it is that I think that when I'm close my eyes and I listen to Nick, I hear Eddie, and that's a good thing, because Eddie has a nice demeanor about him as he broadcasts at the highest level for both the team he covers and for TNT.
The thing I admire the most, and people will hear it when we bring them on, is Nick's cadence is incredibly smooth. It's not awkward, but it's not rushed. It's not fast, and there's not a lot of ums and ahs in it.
Well,
that's what I respect the most about a young broadcaster being able to deliver the way he does.
One of the pieces of advice that old broadcast people give young broadcast people is to learn how to count to 10 in 20 seconds. If you can learn to count to 10 in 20 seconds, you have an excellent cadence.
I've never heard that before.
Well,
why am I at this stage of my career, knowing you for as long as I have, and you've never told me that?
Because it wasn't my job to tell you that. I was a coworker. I wasn't your boss. You know, if you really screwed up, you heard from me.
Yes,
but
I've heard from you a few times.
Yeah,
which I love it. I tell my colleagues, our broadcast team, all the time, with Dave Gosher and Shane Knighty and Ashley Weiss, Gerlaus, that you as a mentor mean the world to me in the ability to guide me along, even at the back end of my career. So I'm just surprised I've never heard that that little tip.
No. Just remember that. Learn how to count to 10 in 20 seconds.
I'll do that during our
And then remember also that when you are speaking, that's your business. And words are currency in your business. How's that one?
What does that mean?
Every word matters. Pick every word properly.
I
Don't
thought that's
put
what it
in.
meant, but then I thought I was going down a different path too, and I thought I'd better clarify this
Yeah.
because
No.
I've got a game later on today.
Words are currency.
Carolina Hurricanes
Yep.
game
That'll be a
tonight,
good
so that's
game. That'll be a good game. That'll be a relentless game.
yeah, and both teams aren't
Both
very
teams.
happy right now.
Yeah, I know.
We're going to talk things beyond just the X and O's of a hockey. No details, more broad strokes with Eddie Olchek and Nick Olchek coming up on 100% Hockey with John Shannon and Darren Millar. This promises to be a magical conversation, and John and I won't have to say anything. There's Eddie Olchek over there, and there's Nick Olchek over there. And I challenge anybody who's listening to this to be able to tell a difference between the two of them when they start talking. But the best part about it was dad tuning in son about just showing up right on time. Eddie, I love the dad in you.
Well, Mallard and Mr. Shannon, great to be with you. And Nick, nice to see you. Nice to have this opportunity to chat with you. And hey, look it, I asked right at 3 o'clock, anybody heard from Nick? And all of a sudden he pops on. But you know today's youths, right? You know today, like could have been on at 254, 253, like we were, like the older guys. And he got on, we're not gonna find him because he was before the time that was allotted. So he started off the day on the right note with his dad, that's for sure.
Okay,
Well,
Nick, you bet.
who's to say I wasn't in the waiting room for a couple of minutes, right? Maybe
Nick,
the Zoom took a
first
little
off,
long.
hold on a second. First off, okay, move your right shoulder just a little bit so I can see. Okay, let me just give you a little help here. You're off the payroll for, most of everything. But if you want to save yourself about $35 a month, lower that thermostat to about 70.5 and you'll save yourself $360 a year. So that's one way to help add to the bankroll. Just remember
I thought 72 was perfect, but
that.
I actually might.
It's a little warm.
Yeah. He's like his
72
uncle.
used to, when we were the when we were kids, 72 was the number. Just for the record, 72 was the number.
Thank you. Thank you.
You know,
Really?
and but it has, global warming allows us to go to 70.5. So.
Hey, Mr.
Okay.
Shannon, let me just tell you this. If we were at Nick's grandma's, my late mother's house, and we ever even thought about going towards a thermostat, we would have had a spatula, a wooden spoon. It would have been flying there. We would have looked, we would have looked like Murray Bannerman back in the 84, 85 playoffs against the Edmonton Oilers. I mean, holy cow. Yeah, Nick, okay. You know what, Nick? I'll meet you halfway. Just go to 71 and you'll save yourself about $19.99 a month. All right.
Shannon, did you produce those Bannerman series against the
I
Oilers?
did. I
Yeah.
did. The Bannerman series, my favorite one of all time was the Tony Esposito series.
Yeah.
Tony was still playing, and I remember going we were in Edmonton, and I remember going around the corner for dinner before one of the games, and Tony's at a little restaurant by himself having dinner. I think the next night it was 8-1 Edmonton. And Tony, and I introduced myself to Tony at that point and just said hello and we'll see you tomorrow. And he says, I go early because I have to get my Tiger Bomb on. And he had Tiger Bomb on from the neck down, if I'm correct,
Oh, yeah, I think it was
because
laddered up.
that way it wouldn't hurt as much when the puck hit.
Yeah. I heard Skippy Thayer, the trainer at that time, he had rubber gloves on him all the time. I'm not sure why all the time, but if Tony needed the Tiger Bomb, he was able to lather him up there. And that was one of the ways, at least in the old days. I don't know if guys do that anymore, but that's how guys would kind of really get loose and stay loose. And you better make sure if you're going to go around the groinage area there that you
Yeah,
don't
hold
go
on.
too hot or too deep.
This is a PG show, okay?
We
This is
wanted
a
to get
friend.
the
This is
tea
a friends
on.
and family show, so.
we wanted to get you guys on because one, father, son, Eddie and Nick, but also National Hockey League broadcasters. And it's so unique to have that type of relationship inside the game. And you guys worked together last year in Seattle, part of the same broadcast. This year, Eddie's in Seattle and Nick's moved on to Utah. So I'm curious, Nick, when did you get the broadcast bug? And is it because of Dad?
It's a great question because I've been asked that a lot.
So it's not a great question.
It's not a great question. No,
it's not. If you get asked a lot, it's not a good question, Nick.
We should probably skip it.
But I love.
Hold on a second here. Hey, Nick. What have I told you? You tell somebody it's a great question, and you just get right into it. You don't have to sit there and then go ahead and just come off the top turnbuckle and go, "Hey, Mallard, I get this all the time."
I love it because it's a meaningful topic for me. I don't know if I wanted to do this solely because of my dad. I felt like it's been something that was kind of innate into me. And I think back to when I was growing up and 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old and just watching the TV and talking. And then when I got to teenage years, my dad knows this well. I would often be in my bedroom playing video games. And as I was playing those video games, I would do play-by-play. I would do color. I would do studio, pregame, and postgame.
At 2:30 in the morning, by the way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There were a couple of those times where my incredible mom would come in and she would knock on the door and she would tell me to pipe down. But, you know, so I think – I think Dad was asleep by then, weren't you? I think you were
well, Mallard, a couple hours. I was just getting in, you know, that's the way.
Oh, yeah, sure. For anybody that knows him, he was asleep for a couple hours by then. But no, I feel like this is something that I really was always meant to do. And I love to play hockey. And after 2 years at CC, Colorado College, playing Division I hockey there, it just, you know, kind of came to a decision. And I was like, you know what? I felt like I always wanted to pursue broadcasting. And you know, like I said, whether it's in my bedroom at home growing up or where I'm at now, you know, I think it's just been kind of something that I always felt like when I was done playing, that this is what I wanted to move into. And no doubt, I mean, seeing my dad on TV and seeing how he talks about the game and thinks the game, there was never a dull moment in our household to teach the game. And the one thing I tell a lot of people when they ask is good luck being the rewind and pause buttons on our remote control at home, because those things were wore down to a nub. And, you know, so it was always learning and always trying to get better and just really a lot of fun growing up.
You know, you talked about being a pretty good hockey player yourself. Could you imagine playing in the National Hockey League as an 18-year-old like your dad did?
No. And honestly, I'd be the first to tell you, was I, and maybe my dad from a dad's point of view and me being in, like, I was never the best player. I always tried to work hard and be a good teammate. And eventually, whenever I got into my junior and college years, you know, the role shifted to more of a penalty kill and winning a face-off. And you win, you go out there for a big draw in the D zone, and then the team gets out of the zone, and then I get off the ice, you know, type of thing. But I knew that eventually playing professionally was probably not going to be something that was going to be in the future. And that's okay. So I was like, okay, well, I still want to be in the game of hockey. I still love it no less than when I played. And I just felt like the most, you know, smooth transition, and the best transition I could make was broadcasting. And I don't say this very much, but back in my college days, when there were games when I would play, and I didn't play a lot, there'd be games where I'd be on the bench for a long period of time because I wasn't playing, and I'd be actually like broadcasting under my breath as what's going what was going on. And then I'd kind of get my teammates looking over me like, "You okay?" I'm like, yeah, I'm okay. And then
Mallard and Mr. Shannon, I think I did that the year that I was part of the Stanley Cup champion Rangers. I did that. I did it on a bench a few times with old Iron Mike standing behind me and in the locker room there when I was a healthy scratch for a long time. So yeah, that's Nicky's he's got it in the blood and he's got it in the genes. There's no doubt about it. And I'll take the secondary assist. We'll give the primary assist to my wife and Nick's mom.
What advice did you tell Nick when he said, "You know what, Dad, I want to be a broadcaster"?
Have great humility. I think that's the first thing I told him. And you know this, Mr. Shannon, from being in, you know, on both sides of the camera, but being behind for such a long time as a terrific TV man. I think audiences, fan bases, viewers, I think appreciate humility. When you make a mistake, you own it, you laugh at yourself, and you move on. And I think that's something that I learned very early with some of the people that I worked with in the game, whether I was doing radio or getting into TV, even while I was still playing in the late 90s. But I think that's the one thing. I look at have passion, have fun, all that kind of stuff. And that's, I think either you have it or you don't. I don't think that you can, I don't think you have to make it up. I think some of the best stuff anywhere, like on your guys' show or games that I might do, is when it's organic. That sometimes is the best stuff. Like, mm-hmm. you know, it's, you're talking about the greatest game in the world. And I think what I've tried to help Nick with is just, you know, be yourself. Don't be long-winded and just have great humility when you're doing it and have fun. People want to be entertained. I mean, this, look at, I like to think is that we as broadcasters in a game of hockey, and Mallard, you know, you do this when you're hosting there with the BGK, is, you know, people are turning on the games to be entertained, right? You take them away from the real world, right? For those fans that are watching at home or wherever they might be, you know, we all have a real world, but you want to entertain them. And I think that's the one thing. I think the first thing I might've sent to them was just look at, just have humility. And when you make a mistake, own it, because it's live TV. I mean, Doc Emmerich, the great Doc Emmerich, always told me, he's like, once you say it, it's off the Mars. And it's true. And it's not going anywhere. It's always going to be out there. So, you know, as analysts, you get the opportunity to think before you speak a lot of times. And you can always learn from, you know, from your games and your reps. But I think that's probably the one thing I would tell any young broadcaster is, regardless of the sport or, you know, into TV or radio or whatever it is, or even, you know, writing, it's having that humility. And I think that's how you build, I think that's how you build great credibility. And I think Nick has done a very good job of it in a very short period of time, especially at the highest level.
And if I could just, I don't mean to interrupt, but I think back to the conversation I had with my dad when I decided that playing was no longer going to be something that I wanted to pursue. And I wanted to switch into broadcasting. And it was a couple of days where I was thinking about how I was going to say it to him, because look, there growing up, there was always a lot of pressure from outside. And I know that whether I wanted to play hockey or be part of hockey or not, is that my mom and dad would have supported me and my siblings, no question. But to have the career that my dad did and to want to have followed in those footsteps, you know, there was a lot of internal pressure for me to want to do that. And then I felt that when playing was not going to be in my future, I felt like in a way I let him down and I let our family down. But the one thing that really reassured me is that when it came time to have that decision, there was no anger from his part. There was no disappointment. It was like, okay, if this is what you want to do and playing is no longer in the cards, okay, I support you in what you want to do. So, you know, like that was one of the hardest conversations that I had to prepare for. And then when I had it, it was just like, okay, my dad supports me in whatever I want to do. So, you know, look, it's whenever you have a dad that has achieved as much as he has, and how proud of him I am for that dad, I am. You know, there's a certain level that you want to live up to, and you want to, you know, achieve everything that he did. But sometimes it's not exactly in the cards. So now you try to, while you're doing your own thing and you're carving your own path, you know, make a transition into something that you do love to do. And I just, I can't be thankful and grateful enough
to the support that I've had in that transition from playing to doing what I feel like I've always been meant to do, and that's broadcasting in the NHL now.
Do you remember that conversation, Eddie?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of felt it was, you know, because that his 2 years at CC Mallard were when I was sick, and that was really hard for Nick. I mean, he was going to school as a freshman, and I was just been diagnosed on August the 4th of 2017, and Nicky was on his way to school, and you know, I can imagine, you know, he's going off to school. Like Nick didn't want to go. Like Nick wanted to stay home. You know, he wanted to take care of me. You know, he wanted to be around, and I'm sure he was scared. But I think after convincing him, say, Nick, I'm in good hands. You know, like you got to live your life, and I promise I'll come see you, and you know, we'll keep you updated. And you know, so I'm sure his mind probably for the 2 years that he was at school, probably, you know, I mean, he came home in the summer, but you know, when he was at school, I'm sure his mind was wandering, and especially in the first year. But I kind of had an idea, just it just wasn't playing out the way I think that we all had hoped, and most importantly, because Nick, because he really, I think he, I mean, he did. He really enjoyed being out there at CC and going to school and, you know, meeting a lot of people and people that he still stays in contact with today. But I think it was one of those where I kind of had a feeling, but I think there's also that part as a father where just the whole situation wasn't what he was hoping, and I think there was probably some anger and some disappointment for him because he wanted to go to school and play the 4 years there and go on. But it was one of those, like, as you guys both know, if your kids are good, you're great. And I felt like Nicky was making an incredibly mature decision, and you know, we were going to say, okay, well, this is how we're going to, you know, I'm going to get you home, carve out a path, and figure it all out. So, yeah, I mean, it was because I knew he loved playing the game, and I knew that, you know, it's been his whole life. But it, as Nicky kind of alluded to, it didn't mean that you can't still be a part of the greatest game at any level. Like I'm sure that we'll get into where he started, but I mean, that opportunity to be able to just be around and learn a whole new, you know, it's almost like putting on skates and grabbing a stick for the first time and going out there when you do get into the broadcast side, whether it's on a streaming part or radio or ended up being on television. So yeah, it was, I don't think it was an emotional conversation, but it was, I think it was, there was a lot of peace amongst the both of us. When he ended up coming to that decision and said, okay, we're just going to, you know, we're going to go day to day and we're going to try to help you get to where you want to get to. And now about maybe 5-7 years, you know, that it would take for him to get that opportunity to get to the NHL. But, you know, he's worked his ass off and done the things the right way. And a door opened for him a couple of years ago and he took advantage of it. And, you know, so-called the rest is history. But, you know, you just, like I said, if your kids are good, you're great as a parent. And both my wife and I were very happy for Nick.
So as a parent, Eddie, you watch Nick play, whether it be in Waterloo or with the Steel or wherever, you're sitting in the seats watching them. And I'm assuming you're as nervous as any other parent watching your kid play.
Yeah.
Are you the same nervous when you listen to your son as a broadcaster?
No.
Why? How come?
Yeah, I'm not. I honestly, I'm not. I just think like he's built for this. Like that's just my honest. Like you're right. I mean, nervous wreck on, you know, like shoot it, go get it, don't change, stay out there, you know, all that kind of stuff. I mean, that's since he was, you know, 6.5, 7 years old. And yeah, I mean, we talk about the games in certain situations and. I've always told him, is like, look at, you always watch your games back. You always watch other games. And I'm sure for both of you, it's how would I handle that? That's why you guys have been so successful and still are, is how would I handle that situation if I was the host, Mallard, or Mr. Shannon, you were on a desk, right? Like, what would I say? I mean, doesn't mean that you're disagreeing with what they said. You're saying, well, how would I handle that? when all of a sudden the light goes on and it's live and somebody either throws you a grenade with the pin out, or it's like, okay, I got to really, it's not what you say, it's how you say it. So I think for me, when I'm watching Nick now, and then we go back and we talk about certain things, or he'll send me a clip, or I'll just say, hey, you know what, just put a bow on it maybe about 8 or 10 seconds later, and it's really good. Or, you know what, I didn't agree with any of that, so maybe you want to maybe reword it a different way. But, like, honestly, like, when I'm watching him now, like, I mean, I'm watching a game just as I watch any other game that I do on a nightly basis, and I listen to how and what the analysis is, and say, or when it gets the opportunity, is try to say what they might say or what I would say in that particular situation. So I mean, I'm going to say it. I sit there on my couch and I just stick my chest out and I go, that's Nick. That's yeah. Nick. And it's a lot of fun, but there is a lot of work that goes on behind the scenes. And when he asks for it, you know, I give it to him. And sometimes when I think he needs it, then I'll go ahead and might be a one-way conversation, but he's got unbelievable people he works with in Utah.
Yep.
And I'm sure there's a lot of that going on behind the scenes, but I just try to, you know, just give him a couple of things every once in a while, but not as nervous when he played or any of my boys played. I'm very comfortable. I might be having a little Penn State Creamery strawberry ice cream while I'm sitting back watching Nick, because I don't have a care in the world when I'm not working.
And to that point, whenever people say you do a good job, it means a lot, right? I think for all of us. But with all due respect to a lot of people that have been kind enough to give either constructive criticism or to give positive feedback and give you a pat on the back, there's nothing like getting a good job from my dad.
Oh, yeah.
That there's just like... I could have 1,000 people line up and shake my hand and say, great job.
Okay,
but
okay, hold on.
I'm not saying that would ever happen. I'm not saying that would ever happen, but I'm just saying if there were to be compliments from other people, nothing could compare to the feeling you get from my dad, who I think is the greatest to ever do it. So the feedback and the support and the constant teaching from a young age until now, which will continue for forever, I'm just eternally grateful for.
What were you going to jump in there with, Eddie?
I was going to say the greatest that's ever done it, and obviously you guys both know him, and Mr. Shannon work with JD for a long time. John Davidson to me was somebody that I've looked at as a hockey guy, and he's one of those guys at Mount Rushmore when it comes to the greatest, analyst that we've ever had on either side of the border. I mean, mm-hmm. I think JD is somebody, I got a chance to know JD very well when I was in New York in the early 90s, and the way that he carried himself and the way that he treated me, the way that I saw him treat the other players, how the players, managers, coaches, owners, all. And I've always kind of, and then I got the opportunity when JD said, okay, you know what, I'm going to go be an executive in St. Louis. All of a sudden that chair next to Doc Emmerich became open, and all of a sudden there goes JD. And then all of a sudden here comes old Edzo. And all of a sudden it's like, holy jeez, I gotta fill these shoes, you know? So it's a great honor to try to, you know, fill in the shoes of John Davidson. But, you know, Nick, I'm glad that you read my text earlier with exactly how I wanted you to say what you said. So I appreciate that. But JD's the man. And Nick, I'm sure back, you know, you remember John Davidson and Doc doing all those games for so many years. And just the way that, I mean, I learned this from, I guess, you know, I mean, I had a lot of partners over the years. I don't want to leave anybody out, but I mean, it was Mike Lang, Pat Foley, and Doc Emmerich, where, you know, I mean, I'm pretty lucky. I've lined myself with guys that are, you know, legends in their own towns and legends, you know, across, you know, all walks of life. I learned and felt in listening to JD is that, you know, you're there to tell the story. You're not there to be the story. And I think, you know, you can have an opinion, but it's quick. You get it, and then you move on, right? So I think that's what I've learned over the years, and I think that's one of those things with JD where he was able to make some really good, strong points, regardless of the situation or who it was, and to be able to learn from him on a, you know, on a friendly basis, but then also professionally, I think has really helped me and try to continue to try to be as good as JD was for all those years, because in my opinion, you know, nobody has done it better anywhere when it comes to the lead analyst on a hockey broadcast.
John, hold that thought. I know you've got something coming. I want to take a break and we'll come back with Eddie, Nick, John Shannon, and Darren Millard on 100% Hockey. John, the floor is yours.
Well, I think, you know, Eddie and John Davidson are at the top of the list. I think that's pretty damn good company, Eddie, when it comes to that. So my question really, Nick, it's amazing to think that you've been able to watch your, do you remember your dad playing at all? Do you remember him at all playing?
Yeah, no, I was born in 96. Okay. And then he retired. Yeah, he retired in 2000. So the memories I do have is of him coaching in Pittsburgh, though, when I was a little guy running around, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, somewhere around there. So nothing of him playing, though.
And what about YouTube? You go to YouTube and watch your dad?
Yeah. And surprisingly, I found a lot of video that's not in black and white. So it's a lot of it is in color and it looks good.
Hey, Nick, and it's nice to see you. You lowered your, I think, is that a 71 or is that an arrow? What is that there?
No, it's 70. It went to 71. Wow. I lowered it.
He just turned up the heat on himself. I can tell you that.
that's what we call our great friend, the great Dominic Porro, my Uncle Dom. He says, yeah, those two guys there are major league ball busters. So that was a ball busting move by my son.
Hey, so when you look at how you view your role, Nick, how would you describe the way you analyze a game?
I look for cause and effect. That's, I think if I were to break it down into a short, concise phrase, it would be cause and effect. We all see a goal happens. But what I am most obsessed with is the defensive play, a player taking a hit to make a play 30 seconds prior that directly leads to something that happens on the offensive side. That I think is how I see the game in terms of analyzing goals and plays. I am a gear geek. I love just going around the locker room and checking out players' skates and their mm-hmm. sticks. And so I always try to have that knowledge banked in my brain. So when here in Utah, Michael Kessering is able to take a slap shot at 103.7 miles an hour like he did earlier in the year, I know that he uses 107 flex, and that certainly aids in the puck being able to get up to those types of speeds. And yeah, and by the way, he's 6'5", which certainly helps too.
I'm writing that 107 thing down because when I do a Utah game, I'm going to remember that.
Yes, 103.7. Yeah, and then later that day, Tage Thompson broke it. I think he got up to about 104 miles an hour. So
yeah, he did.
Just incredible. So in terms of analyzing the game, I try to look for what happens that leads to a goal, right? Because the one thing, especially here in Utah, a lot of new fans, but also a lot of fans that have a lot of hockey experience too. So how do I walk the line of the new and the experienced fans? And I think that is a great way to do it, along with the gear and trying to personalize the players. I think that's kind of something that I've always tried to make an effort on. And that's the one thing I think that my dad does so well too, is like a photographic memory of, okay, yeah, it was a great shot, but how about the pass or one player beating another player one-on-one that led to it, or a defensive zone breakdown, something along those lines.
And I think, you know, it made me think, and that's a great question, Mr. Shannon, is that, and you guys know Sam Flood, obviously, you know, top executive at NBC Sports and my boss forever, still my boss when it comes to horse racing, when I do the Kentucky Derby and Breeders' Cup for NBC. And Sam, when I sat in that chair and he gave me, you know, gave me the opportunity to sit in that chair next to Doc Emrick. He would always remind me, and I would just put a little insignia on the top of my game notes. And you'll know what I'm talking about in a second, but he said, look, you're there to tell me why. He didn't say you're telling people why, you're telling me why. Now Sam's a big hockey guy. And when he said, you know, tell me why, like what happened, right? Like, yeah, like Nick said, we see the puck going to the net, but how can you separate yourself or be different and pick up things that, you know, that maybe some other people can't? Not easy to do, but sometimes if you're really into it, you see it, and sometimes you do it. And look at it. Sometimes there's games where you sit there and you just go, man, how did I miss that? You know, how did I see the guy, you know, whatever, hold the guy from coming on the ice or whatever it might be. So when I started realizing how I needed to try to be the best that I could, and he told me that is tell me why, I'm just like, okay, well, and I just put a big question mark right on the top of my notes. And it's just like, okay, like, yeah, the puck goes in, it's a great shot or whatever, but look, well, this is, you know, I think this is what he was trying to do. But, you know, once this player, you know, crossed over his legs on the one-on-one, is that it was pretty easy for him to go to the inside and cut back or whatever. So I think just that little, that conversation from, you know, a top executive at NBC Sports and, you know, a friend and a boss and Sam Flood is just like, okay. And I think I needed that. I needed some guidance and, you know, look at to have a partner like Doc or all the different partners, like now working with the great Johnny Forslund or Kenny Albert, or, you know, in the days working with, you know, with Sam Rosen and Bob Miller and Jim Houston, you know, Kenny Daniels, Matty McConnell. I mean, I could go on and on of the people that I'm so lucky to have, you know, to have worked with in the broadcast booth, is to, you know, try to do that same, you know, have that same philosophy night in and night out. I mean, as you guys know, I mean, sometimes it's hard. I mean, sometimes it's, you know, the monitors in the booth are still from, you know, I was going to say the days when you were doing TV back in the 60s there, Mr. Shannon.
Oh, thanks. Thank you, Eddie.
And Howie Meeker with the Telestrator.
Oh, hey, listen, that was gold.
So, but it's just kind of, you know, and I think that that's important for Nick, and he knows this, and we've had these type of conversations, and you know, and especially now, I mean, look at, I mean, two people booths were pretty much the norm forever, and now in the last, you know, handful of years, going to a three person booth, the chemistry, the cadence, knowing when to get in, knowing when to get out, knowing when to, you know, just let the let your partner, the play-by-play man, call the game. All those things come with, you know, repetition and experience. Mm-hmm. But for me, I think the one thing was is just, you know, remember you're in there to tell the story and not be the story, and tell people why. And you'd like them to walk away or get up or close their eyes and sit there and go, wow, that was, you know, I was entertained. Because look at it, people are watching. They're there to watch the game. We're just there to add to it. That's right. Kind of the philosophy that I learned a long time ago.
So, Nick, I'm just going to give you a little bit of advice here, because that's what I do at my age. So I started working in this business in the 70s, and I got lucky enough to go into the broadcast booth in the first year of the Toronto Blue Jays in Major League Baseball. And Tony Kubek was the color man for the Jays that first year. And on the top of his monitor and the bottom of his monitor, he had two messages taped. On the top of the monitor, why? This is 1977. Why? Tony Kubek. At the bottom of the monitor was, shut the fuck up. Because by the time you read the second one, you'd talk too long. And that's the real challenge of our business. The other one is, most of the people you talk to have never played the game of hockey in their life. In their life. If you get too detailed and too complex, even to the point of F1 in deep. That's my favorite one. I hate that one. That drives me nuts. If you talk F1 in deep, 90% of your audience doesn't understand it. They don't know it. They've never been in a meeting where the guy's got the whiteboard going. They just want to know why it happened and who those guys are. And of course, there's my lesson for the day. I'm done. Darren?
Write that down, Nick, or type it down or whatever. Text it to yourself.
I'm writing it down.
Every time on the air in my house, F1 in deep or F3 high, I my head explodes.
I always think the F2 gets a raw deal.
Yeah. Oh. I'm going to need to go burn some of the tape then, because I think I used that last game.
I just think people at home, yeah, you know, remember, you're not talking to your hockey buddies in the dressing room. You're talking to people at home, particularly in a town like you, in like Salt Lake, where you know, they don't not sure about the game yet.
Yeah,
and
right.
and that's a, and Seattle probably the same way when it started there. That's the real challenge.
Yeah, Nick, if you really want to separate yourself too, you can sit there and drop an F1 and F2 and you just say, ah, I shouldn't have said that. F me.
Yes.
Don't do that, because your mom's gonna get mad at me. So don't.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, Eddie, what do you love the most about how Nick broadcasts? And Nick, follow it up with, how do you want to be different than your dad, if anyway? Eddie.
I think he has grasped the ability, as Mr. Shannon talked about, of getting in and getting out, right? Like, it's different. Like, I know with him, with Maddie McConnell and Dom Moore and Nick down at ice level at home and at the Delta Center in Salt Lake, Nicky's the third man. So, you know, it's different than when maybe Nicky's on the road working solo with Maddie, where you got to know when that opportunity presents itself to get in, quick little talk. And I've always told, and I tell young, especially hockey broadcasters, and I tell Nick this all the time, if you're ever talking, and the game has really changed over the years, I'm sure Mr. Shannon could tell you, it's like, it used to be when the puck was in play, you heard one voice and that's it. Mm-hmm. I think now, at least our bosses at TNT, they enjoy the conversation and banter. Do sometimes Kenny, Bush, and I won't put Kenny in this because, you know, Kenny's just right on the line. Me and Bush, yeah, do we wander a little bit stray? Yeah, we probably go a little too off the chart sometimes, but, you know, we try to reel ourselves in. But the point of it is that tell young broadcasters, if you're ever talking and the puck's in a danger area, you don't sit there and go, okay, Kenny, take it. Just stop talking.
Just
and
stop.
And then he'll pick it up, right? Like, it's going to happen. Look, there's no worse feeling as an analyst. And it happened with me with Doc Emmerich, I think twice in 14 years that I worked with Doc, I think. Two times where I had my mouth open and the puck ends up into the net, you know, and there's no worse feeling. I mean, it's bad, but I think it's Nick's ability, Mallard, to get in, have something really good to say, and then let the guys upstairs take it. And even more so, sometimes when he lays out, and I'm not being funny, like sometimes you don't need to say anything. And that's a sign of a mature broadcast.
That's brilliant.
I think for me,
be careful.
the things I appreciate most about my dad's ability is he always seems to have a grasp at that one moment that changed the game. And refer to it at the most poignant moment, a big save, a good shift that turned the momentum in the game. Aside from just the goals and the big plays that might stand out. So it's that. Look, we got a lot of incredibly smart people in the game, no question. But I don't think there's anybody that knows the league or its players better than my dad. So that's, I think, another thing that I value and appreciate most about him. In terms of my own path and being different, I am trying to incorporate, and Mr. Shannon, please don't yell at me here, but I think numbers and analytics have a place. Now, to say those things without defining what they are quickly, I think is a little bit of doing a disservice. For example, Utah last game did an incredible job defending the rush. Like, they really did not give the New York Rangers a lot because they had they denied the zone. The zone denial, defensive zone denial percentage was over 70%. So is there a way that I could work that in there? Because there are fans that are curious for those types of numbers. And I think that is something that I'm trying to incorporate a little bit more of. I'll always be a hockey purist. I'll always be a guy that defers more to the eye test, no doubt, because I try to get into the players' heads as far as what they're thinking, what they're trying to do, what they're not trying to do in some circumstances. But, you know, look,
different vocabulary at times.
Okay. Well, hold on.
That's
a second.
A challenge. That's a challenge.
Now we're going vocabulary. Now, so what are you saying? You went to CC for 2 years, and you're saying that like you have a longer list on your Webster dictionary, or what is going on?
Well, I know that I dropped out of college, but did you ever go? did you have much time at school in Stratford, Ontario, at all, or no?
Don't worry about it, Nick.
A lot of time.
We went to the All Ontario Junior B final that year against Henry Carr. Okay, so don't worry about it.
Listen, no, there's a lot of time on this show for the Stratford Cultons, that's for sure.
But I personally enjoy the University of Olympic Games.
By the way, Nick, I don't mind analytics.
Yeah.
But you have to put them in context.
Yeah.
Tell me the context. Yeah. You know, there are some analytics things that are the stupidest things I've ever heard. Expected goals. Well, why are we playing the game?
Yeah.
You know, stop it. But if you can tell me, you know, the zone entries that are 70%, what's their at? What do they normally allow?
Right.
You got to put everything, every number has to be in context. That's the challenge.
Yeah. And I think for, there's no doubt. I was going to say, I mean, we could have played that game, you know, like the newlywed game, but we do father and I would have rolled numbers right there. Cause that's, that is Nick. And I think it's good at times. I'm trying to learn a little bit more about the analytics and how can that help me become better in understanding. But again, I mean, the game is evolving and we all know, I mean, it's the fastest game in the world. And when you call the game, it's sometimes really hard. But if you do have that ability and you got to work at it, is to your point, Mr. Shannon, is to be able to figure out what you're trying to say in a very short period of time so that everybody can understand, just not the analytics people or the NHL people, but just somebody sitting at home and you know, if it's graphically, it helps. Again, maybe that's during a timeout or that's during intermission. I think a lot of the number stuff is probably better suited or more suited for the intermission type of thing where that you can be a little bit more elongated on, you know, the answer and the why.
Darren needs that help in the intermission. We know that.
I like my numbers.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm right with Nick on that. I love my numbers, Nick.
Numbers only mean something if you can compare it.
We're trying to do that.
No, you're not. Listen, if you have two, here, this is my soapbox today. If you have 2 minutes to talk, and if you start talking numbers and you had a 2 minute great story about a player, you've compromised your 2 minute story on the player by just doing numbers. And, you know, people play the game. Numbers don't play the game.
Well, you don't have
people
to do numbers all the time, but if they fit, they fit.
Again, context. Okay, listen, we've talked a lot about other stuff.
This is my dad, by the way. It's great biggest, to host a podcast with my dad.
Best story in the NHL right now, Nick. What's the best story in the NHL?
Look, I'm going to have to stay in the hometown here in Salt Lake, really. I mean, the buzz around the town, the love of this team already. Yeah, look, there's been some struggles, no doubt. It's the third youngest team in the National Hockey League. But the season that Clayton Keller is having, over a point a game, and look out for Logan Cooley. Oh, like, really, he, as fast as he is, as skilled as he is, as capable to take players one-on-one and beat them, just as easy to do that as he is to put his head down and just drive wide. But all of that being said, like, his defensive game is really blossoming without a doubt. And I think all those tools help him there. The way he sees the game, he reads the game, his speed helps him, I think, just as much defensively to close down spaces and take away time and space. He had the big matchup against the big boys of the New York Rangers last game, thought he did a good job. And, oh, by the way, he's producing the whole time through. So a lot of excitement here in first year. Like, look.
Hey, by the way, Seattle, it would be better if they were 11-6 at home rather than 6-11.
Yeah. Yeah. That's been a battle. It's been a battle, and they've been better on the road. I just think at times they've been trying to diagnose why road has been better than at home. Like, it's an incredible crowd at Delta Center. And I feel like at times the players, they try to do a little bit too much. The crowd's oohing and awing, and they try to beat one guy, beat another guy, and then go beat the first guy you beat again. Right. And to keep the energy up in the building. But it's just been so special to be part of this. And Look, I wasn't in a hurry to leave Seattle when this opportunity came around. I wasn't looking to leave. I wasn't trying to leave. And then all of a sudden, the Utah Hockey Club called. And it's just like, you know, to be part of something from the ground up is incredibly special, coming from a place where we joined in the second year for Seattle. So I kind of had a little bit of a trial run as far as how things need to go, being the incredible first-class organization that the Kraken are. So I think everything that Utah is doing on the ice and in the community this year really has been an incredible story this season.
Hey, if you guys need a place to stay for the Olympics in Salt Lake in a few years, you know, you can call Nick, and you know, I'm sure he'd take really good care of you guys. He'll set that thermostat at like 64 when you guys get there.
What about you, Eddie? What's the biggest story in hockey?
I touched on it on our TNT broadcast in Minnesota the other night with Edmonton in there and Connor McDavid moving up the ladder there in points. Well, I mean, he does every day, but you know, in the history of the and you know, the Edmonton Oilers are only trailing Gretz now. I would say that the Boston Bruins making a coaching change, the Detroit Red Wings making a coaching change, and the St. Louis Blues making a coaching change. And I feel that all three teams have changed their fortune moving forward. I really do. I've always been a big fan of Joey Sacco. I think Mallard, we talked about him maybe last year, yeah. You know, and I think the world of him, I think he's, you know, I just think he's got that it factor. I really believe that. And look, he's been in Boston for, you know, 9, 10 years, whatever it is. So look at, I mean, I know they went through a tough stretch there. They just finally beat Florida the other day, I think it was, after losing 4 in a row. But, you know, I think that change that was needed. And obviously, I mean, you don't like to see guys, look at, I live there. It's no fun to see anybody lose their job. But I think you look at those three teams, sometimes, you know, it works now. We'll see. We'll see if Detroit can keep this thing going. You know, St. Louis seems to be a little bit up and down as well. But all these, I think that to me, you know, team-wise, and is really stuck out with the three teams that have made coaching changes and think have kind of turned their hopes and their season around.
Well, you guys have all combined. I'll put you, John, in this group as well. Done a lot of TV over the years. Called championships, won championships, scored goals, great calls.
I haven't scored that many goals.
No, you haven't, but you're in a group with Edzo. My favorite piece of television, with all due respect to Nick and John, comes from Edzo. At the rally in Winnipeg, when this team wins the Stanley Cup, it's coming back to Winnipeg.
But by the way, where did what show did you?
Greatest call ever.
What show did you watch it on?
I was in the arena watching it.
But everybody watched that on a little show called Hockey Night in Canada.
Yeah.
And one of the four of us was running the show at the point.
You were running that one.
Yep.
Hey, all I know is that Nick was on his way out in about 5 months from that time that I stood up there in front of everybody, because he was born at Cedars-Sinai Hospital about 5 months later on October 4th of 1996. So Nick was hearing it, but he just, you know, he wasn't out in this world just yet when that happened.
Was such a strange period of time too, because Eddie, I don't know if you remember, but you guys chartered to Phoenix,
yeah, right during the season, to
take a look at things, yeah. And we had a camera on the plane,
yeah,
we had a camera on the plane with the team, and we sat the cameraman sat beside Chris King,
yeah,
and you know, and it was such a strange period of time.
Yeah, I was there. I was in the peg. I was on the peg Thursday night with Seattle. I was there with the Kraken. Dylan DeMello scored very late to win the game 2-1. But it was great to see a lot of familiar faces there in Winnipeg. And you know what, Mallard, I love Winnipeg. I mean, I always have. You know, that was a very difficult time because I always related it to. I could never imagine being the biggest Blackhawks fan and Cubs fan that I was as a kid, all the way up, and have one of those teams leave Chicago. I mean, that's how I felt. And I just kind of felt as one of the leaders that, you know what, like these people are crushed. My friends are crushed. You know, will the NHL ever come back? And obviously we know that it has, and I couldn't be happier for the city, and it's always been an NHL city. But I think when that kind of all came, and that was very organic, by the way. That was you know, I didn't know what the hell I was going to say when I was going to go up there. And the people were just, you know, chanting, and they were on their feet, and they were had a whiteout, and we weren't even playing. And it was one of those surreal moments that, what's that? I mean, look, what's that now? 30, it's going on, well, 29 years, right? Yeah, yeah. 29 yeah. years. Doing the math really quickly. Mickey, how old are you? I forget, 28 or 29?
1 year less than 29.
Okay, so that means you're 28. So, yeah, coming up 29 years that since that that day in the peg there, Mallard. So every once in a while, I'll just get a message on my phone, and I do still listen to my messages. I think his name is Healy, first name Glenn. That always seems to just have this, whenever this team ends up and it wins the Stanley Cup, it's coming back to Winnipeg. Of course, Healy's got nothing else better to do than to go ahead and bust my balls from Toronto. You know what I mean?
Well, we actually have a big poster in our basement as well that has his face. That's probably, what, 3 feet
Hold
by
on,
3 feet?
The camera puts
says,
on 15 pounds, by the way. Okay.
My wife would say at that point, if it puts on 15 pounds, you must have four cameras on you. So.
This has been very different and one of the more unique conversations I've ever had in broadcasting, and I really want to on behalf of John tell you guys that we really appreciate it. Nick, it's been so much fun watching your career blossom over the last number of years and getting to know you, and Edzo, from that first time that we met in Winnipeg during a practice, you've been a great friend. So having the two of you together is awesome.
Appreciate it, Mallard. Thanks, Mr. Shannon. Love you guys. Keep up the great work. And Nick, we'll talk soon. Great job, buddy.
Thank you, guys. Dad, love you. And I'll talk to all you guys soon.
No, you don't have to call him again today, Nick.
Hey, lower the temperature.
I'm bumping it back up. Okay. When we're done, off the call.
Cheers, boys.
That dynamic, the
it was good.
Son,
yeah,
it was funny.
Yeah,
but you can tell that they're great buddies.
Yeah,
I want that relationship with my kids when they're adults.
Yeah. I'd like that too.
your kids are adults.
I know.
Mine are still teenagers.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, before we wrap up here, I just want to say that we're taping this on Friday, the 17th. Tomorrow, Saturday, is Hockey Day in Canada. And it's something that selfishly I take a great deal of pride in. We started it in the year 2000, the turn of the century, as I call it. Yeah, hard to believe we say the turn of the century, but because we used to deal that with 1900. Now it's 2000.
And it was so long ago. You're like, oh,
those old people. Anyway, yeah. We started it 25 years ago. And never in my wildest dreams did I imagine that Hockey Day in Canada would exist 25 years later. And I suppose now it's part of the fabric of our country to some extent. And I just want to say that how happy I am that people are still loving the game the way I love the game.
And it's inspired others to do it.
There's
Hockey Day in the United States.
There was a Hockey Day in Czechia last week. And so it has inspired other people. And that to me is, that in many ways might be its greatest legacy.
Where is the location this year?
Canmore, Alberta. So it's, and by the way, just to credit,
I think it's Ron's greatest day.
Well, the show was designed for Ron. The show was designed for Ron because there's so much content and you have to be able to weave stories. And that's what Ron does when he's at his best, is he weaves stories. The other guy that deserves some credit is Joel Darling, who has was at the CBC and now is obviously with Rogers. Joel Darling. What's that? Oh, yeah, that's right. Well, Ted Darling, the voice of the Sabres and a former Hockey Night in Canada host. And Joel, obviously, who grew up in Buffalo and now has worked in Canada at the CBC and Sportsnet for years. Joel Darling has been the mentor. He's the driving force of Hockey Day and deserves a ton of credit for maintaining its position.
I don't know how Ron does it, but Ron McLean just shines.
Truly, the plan for the original concept was designed because we were weaving stories across the country, 10 provinces, 2 territories at that point. And Ron could weave those stories. And that really still is one of his great strengths.
No cue cards. I like my
cue cards. No cue cards. No teleprompter.
No. I haven't used a teleprompter in, I don't know how long. 2005, maybe? Last time I used one. I don't think I could use one anymore.
I'm just glad that I have one for this show. So, can you tell?
Being my dad today.
No, I was the least amount of time I talked in 50 minutes to the show, having Nick and Eddie do all the talking. It was I'm good. I'm only invoice half a fee this one.
I'm gonna go tell my kids. Hey, Eddie told his son to turn down the temperature. You guys, hands off the thermostat.
My wife tells me to turn down the temperature all the time, but it has nothing to do with what the heat in the house is all about. So,
oh, what a great week. Thanks for being part of it, and can't wait to chat with you again next week on 100% Hockey with Darren Millard and John Shannon.
Imagine a single cream that addresses all your skincare needs. Wrinkles, dark circles, age spots, and more. Introducing Caviargon Skin Cream, the only argon, caviar, and retinol formula on the market. Packed with pure Moroccan argon oil, collagen-boosting caviar extract, and retinol, Caviargon deeply hydrates, firms, and rejuvenates without the irritation of traditional retinol. Trusted by women over 45, Caviargon delivers visible results in just weeks. Smoother, firmer, more radiant skin. It's not just possible, it's proven. Visit Caviargon.com today to claim your jar at up to 72% off. That's Caviargon.com. Again, that's Caviargon.com. Experience the luxury your skin deserves.
For a limited time, we're giving away a free Guasha system, a $70 value, with all triple bundle orders.